Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Tuesday, May 4th, 2021 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call of members.
Martha Robertson.
Here.
Leslie Chill. Blake Sigler.
Here.
Shauna Black.
Here.
Amanda Champion.
Here.
Deborah Dawson.
Here.
Henry Granison. He's asked to be excused maybe from this evening, so he may not be joining us. Rich John?
Here.
Dan Klein?
Here.
Amy Corman?
Present.
Mike Lane?
Here.
Dave McKenna?
Here.
Glenn Morey?
Here.
Leslie Schill?
Here.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Present.
It's 13 members present.
Thank you. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices. You would have received any communications and notices, and I have two proclamations this evening. Let me just ask, is anybody here for the Community Action Month proclamation? All right, I'll just read it quickly. Whereas community action agencies were created when the Economic Opportunity Act of 1964 was signed into law, and whereas Tompkins Community Action represents this national network in Tompkins County and has a 55-year history of partnering with households with low incomes to promote self-sufficiency, and at least 17,268 Tompkins County residents live on incomes at or below the federal poverty guidelines. And whereas Tompkins Community Action has made an essential contribution to individuals in Tompkins County by providing innovative and cost-effective programs to attain skills and knowledge to secure opportunities necessary to become self-sufficient, and whereas all people, regardless of income, deserve opportunities to improve their lives, thus ensuring that all the county's citizens can live in dignity, and whereas Tompkins County, New York State, and the entire United States must continue to wage war on poverty by providing support and opportunities for all citizens. Now, therefore, I, Leslie McBean Claiborne, Chairwoman of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim May 2021 as Community Action Month in Tompkins County. Signed this fourth day of May, 2021. And if no one is there to accept this proclamation, I will accept it on behalf of the Tompkins Community Action as a board member of TCA. Thank you all for the lovely proclamation. And the next proclamation in my list is Proclamation of Asian Pacific Islander Heritage Month here. And is there anyone to accept this proclamation? Nick? All right. I will read it. Proclamation of Asian Pacific Islander Heritage Month. Whereas Jeannie Ju, a former congressional staffer in the 1970s, first approached Representative Frank Horton of the idea of designating a month to recognize Asian Pacific Americans following the nation's bicentennial celebrations. In 1977, Representatives Horton and Norman Y. Mineta introduce a United States House of Representatives resolution to proclaim the first 10 days of May as Asian Pacific Heritage Week. And then, A similar bill was introduced by Senators Daniel Inouye and Spark Matsunaga to change from a week to a month, and on May 1, 2009, President Obama issued a presidential proclamation which recalls the challenges faced by Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders and celebrates their great and significant contributions to our society. And whereas the vast diversity of languages, religions, and cultural traditions of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders strengthens the fabric of American society, from the arrival of the first Asian American and Pacific Islander immigrants to those who arrive today, as well as those native to the Hawaiian Islands and to our Pacific Island territories, all possess a common purpose of leading a life bound by the ideals of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And whereas Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders have endured and overcome hardship and heartache in the earliest years, tens of thousands of gold rush pioneers, coal miners, transcontinental railroad builders, as well as farm and orchard laborers were subject to unjust working conditions, prejudice, and discrimination. Even in the darkness of the Exclusion Act and Japanese internment, Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders have persevered, providing for their families and creating opportunities for their children. And whereas, amidst these struggles, Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders have contributed in great and significant ways to all aspects of society. They have created works of literature and art, thrived as American athletes, and prospered in the world of academia. Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders have played a vital role in our nation's economic and technological growth by establishing successful enterprises and pushing the limits of science. They are serving in positions of leadership within the government more now than ever before. And along with all of our great servicemen and women, they have defended the United States from threats at home and abroad, serving our nation with valor. And whereas Asians and Pacific Islanders make up 17.7% of residents in the city of Ithaca and 11.2% of Tompkins County residents, contributing to the intellectual, academic, literary, cultural, and economic vibrancy and diversity of our community with art, businesses, shops, restaurants, and festivals celebrating cultures, cuisines, and events from regions across Asia and the Pacific. Now, therefore, I, Leslie McBean Clairborn, Chairwoman of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim the month of May 2021 as Asian and Pacific Islander Heritage Month in Tompkins County, and that together with our entire community, we join in celebration and recognition of the Asian and Pacific Islander American community here in Tompkins County, signed this fourth day of May 2021. Thank you very much. Thank you for your cheers. Nick, would you like to say something in accepting this proclamation?
Thank you for the proclamation. I accept it in allegiance and to honor, most especially right now, all of the Asians, Asian Americans who are being harassed, bullied, assaulted, battered and denigrated as a result of the resurgence of anti-Asian hate in this country. And I hope that we all think about those victims in this acceptance. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nick. Certainly want to echo those words and encourage everyone to look out for our neighbors. Don't just be bystanders. Be interveners to stop the hate. Thank you very much. We will make sure that a copy of this proclamation gets to whomever we should get it to, probably the Ithaca Asian American Association. We'll make sure it gets there. Thank you for being here, Nick. A quick announcement that we will have, hopefully, a very brief executive session this evening.
Regarding? About what?
Thank you, Greg. Regarding our real estate transactions. Privilege of the floor for the public. Is there anybody from the public who has asked to speak with us?
Brian.
Is Brian here?
Yes.
Good evening, Chair and legislators. I'm here tonight to speak on the resolution adopting a minimally invasive policy for managing the Tompkins County Forest. It's been a controversial topic for the past several years. As the then EMC chair, I guided the development of the report. It is listed in the resolution as well as moderated the public comment sessions. Unfortunately, we have achieved little more consensus on how best to proceed after several years of community discussion. As the chair of the EMC Energy Committee more than a decade ago, I occasionally addressed municipal bodies on the existential threat that climate change posed to civil society, and my remarks were often not well received. Although more in our community are now intellectually aware of the threat, there's not a critical mass to support climate mitigation with such policies as management of forests for carbon dioxide removal. These issues have been discussed for the past year at the Climate Action Council, the Ag and Forestry Advisory Panel, and they, in their final report, they support these mitigation strategies: maintain and increase the carbon sequestration in New York State forests, increase forested acres through afforestation and reforestation efforts to establish climate-adapted resilient forests, increase and maintain tree cover in urban and developed areas to reduce energy use, expand funding for peer-reviewed climate, forest, carbon, and applied forest management research. Given the accelerating impacts of climate change, I would advocate for fully implementing a science-based strategy as a necessary tool in our mitigation toolbox. The forests of the future will look little like those of the past. As our climate continues to deteriorate, more folks will be attracted to an idealized past. No amount of wishful thinking will support a projection that the forests of the recent past will be the forest of the future. We know that climate change is rapidly accelerating. Carbon dioxide and methane levels in the atmosphere continued to rise in 2020, with CO2 levels reaching their highest point in 3.6 million years, according to the calculations of NOAA. Climate change could alter the frequency and intensity of forest disturbances, such as insect outbreaks, invasive species, wildfires, and storms. These disturbances can reduce forest productivity and change the distribution of tree species. In other cases, existing species may shift their range or die out. With increasing CO2 and temperatures, forests will face unprecedented growing conditions. With such challenging conditions, it's very problematic to contemplate managing for old growth. Although I prefer the adoption of a more proactive strategy, I support this resolution as an interim measure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your comments, Brian. I think I want to note, I think Annie, you said the resolution will not be taken up this evening, right? Is Annie there?
Yes. Correct. I'd like to pull it.
Okay. It'll probably be going back to committee for a little work. I just wanted Mr. Eden to know that. All right. Thank you. Any other public? Municipal officials, George, good to see you.
Good evening, everyone. It's good to see you all.
Evening, George. Thank you for being here. George McGonigal, City of Ithaca, Common Council Representative, Ward 1.
Yes, ma'am. I'd like to begin by wishing Jason Molino our very best from everyone at the city. We've all really enjoyed working with him, and we admire his skills and dedication. And Livingston County, which is an awesome county, is lucky to get him. And I hope he and his family enjoy being closer to extended family. And I hope he really enjoys this next chapter. So best wishes, Jason. Okay, so I don't have a lot, as usual. Stop me if you've heard this stuff already. Some changes have been made already in the police reimagining efforts, specifically around the mobile command truck. Did you get that memo from Tompkins County Sheriff? So these are good changes, and I'll just go over them. The Special Weapons and Tactics Team, which is the SWAT team, has been renamed. From now on, it's the Ithaca Tompkins Specialized Response Team, and the uniforms are going to be changed. We don't know quite into what yet, but they're going to look less military and more like police uniforms. Camouflage is not going to be used unless it's needed, like out in the woods. There will be no more no-knock warrants served in homes for drug offenses. That's out. There will be no weapons stored on the truck from now on. The other unit that uses that truck on a regular basis, the CINT unit, which stands for Critical Incident Negotiating Team, their name is also being changed, and it will be the Ithaca Tompkins Crisis Negotiation Team. And those are the two teams that use the truck the most, but the truck will still be used throughout the county for whatever it's needed for. Sometimes it's fire incident. Sometimes it's at a flood. It's going to be repainted. It's going to be re-decaled, and the design of the new paint job is going to be in part taken up by local youth, local residents, so that should be interesting. We'll see how that goes. But if you have any questions, that your sheriff or acting chief John Joe Lee can answer your questions, and also Lieutenant Jake Young, who actually started these changes even before the police reimagining plan came into being. Any questions on that? The other thing I wanted to mention is that tomorrow we have our council meeting, and we'll be voting on continuing the Community Housing Development Fund contribution by the city. In addition, we'll be voting to borrow money, basically, because two major breakdowns at the wastewater treatment plant happened last month. Two very bad things. One involved the digester. It got clogged up, and the top was warped, and it's no longer sealed, and that has to be replaced. to the tune of about $1.6 million, and two industrial strength blowers that are only 7 years old, both stopped working. Those have to be replaced to the tune of about $350,000. So we've really taken a hit in wastewater treatment, and until those blowers are replaced, we're really walking on eggshells with the wastewater treatment plant. If another blower goes, we're in serious trouble. The other big thing we're going to vote on tomorrow is the Ithaca Energy Code supplement. That's basically the Green New Deal. It's incredibly big and complicated. I can't explain it. But that's what we're going to get started on tomorrow. That's all I've got.
Thank you, George. Any questions for George? Martha?
Thanks, Leslin. Thanks, George. Great to see you, as always. Thank you in advance for the vote to continue the Community Development Housing Fund. Hope that all right. Appreciate it. On the wastewater plant, it seems like this might be, really good timing. The American Rescue Plan funds that are coming, and we expect the guidance from the Treasury in the near, maybe next 2 weeks, how the money can be used. They specifically identified water, I think it was water and sewer and broadband as eligible capital projects that could be that the money could be used for. So when I looked at those three categories, I thought, well, the county doesn't do water or sewer, so I thought we could do broadband. But it seems like that is the city looking at the ARP funds as a source to cover those repairs?
Yes, we're looking at everything. We're checking under the couch cushions and everywhere, you know.
Okay.
But yes, yeah. That's a good point. I hope we can make that connection.
That's a kind of elegant timing for that. So good luck. Thank you very much.
Dave.
Can't hear you, Dave.
Muted. Sorry about that. Good evening, George.
Hi,
curious,
Dave.
Do you guys have a window? How long is it going to take to repair the digester?
I can't remember how long it's going to take to repair the digester, but to replace the blowers is going to take, I think they said, about 9 weeks. The digester is kind of limping along. It's not working as efficiently and as completely as it should, but it's limping along. The blowers are the things that have staff worried the most, because if another, there's actually four blowers and two are always working and two are standby. The two best ones are the ones that broke. So the two standby blowers are working right now, but now we have no standby. So we're kind of, we think that when we get the new blowers, we can use them in a more efficient way, and that they're not as likely to break down a second time. So I think we've learned something about how the systems all work. But for the next 9 weeks or so, we're crossing our fingers.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. Rich John.
Thanks. I was just curious if you know where the which committee is handling the Community Justice Center resolution. We're working through ours here on the county side, and I was just wondering if you had any idea of the progress on the city.
Oh, I should have mentioned that. The funding for it passed the city administration committee last week. And the only thing I'll say about that is some people are commenting about the fact that the city is paying for that twice, in a sense, because city taxpayers also pay county taxes, and the amount is equal in the city and the county. But you guys probably have different opinions about that.
We probably do.
So it's passed city administration, and I think we'll probably be voting on that as well tomorrow. Pretty right. Sure.
So good news. Thank you, George. Yep.
Thank you, George. Mike Lane.
George, sorry to hear about the problems with the sewer plant. I go back with sewer plants a long way, and I'll tell you, if a digester goes down, that's huge, just as you say. That's the heart of a sewer plant, where everything comes in to begin with. But I was wondering, we've been hearing that DEC is going to be looking at the south end of the lake for phosphorus, and they're going to be looking at the waste treatment plants and other sources. Any idea how the Ithaca wastewater plant does with phosphorus removal?
I know it's probably the best one on the lake.
Is it?
We're very proud of it. And we're getting new parts of it. Apart from this breakdown, it's getting better and better. I don't have the technical language to explain it, but I suspect that we'll do real well with the DEC investigation.
Thank you.
If we don't, I'll certainly tell you.
All right. Thank you, George.
Thank you all.
Thank you, thank you. And we'll certainly stay tuned to the votes tomorrow. All right, privilege of the floor for legislators. Shauna?
Yeah, I just want to say congratulations to the Central Outlaws 12U hockey team out of Lansing, New York. They brought home the gold medal and went to states in Niagara Falls 2 weekends ago. And they sent out a press release to media last week and actually wanted to thank the Tompkins County Health Department for not allowing them to play games in the first half of the season. Because not playing games meant that they actually did 6 practices a week locally. And they contributed their success to our health department, as well as obviously the kids working really hard. So if there's anything to be gained out of a COVID experience, my daughter is very happy to have a new medal on the mantle. And some kids are really happy about working hard and winning the state championship. So good job, kids.
Definitely congratulations to them. Thank you. Deborah.
Yes, thanks, Madam Chair. As long as we're congratulating people and our families, I would like to take the opportunity to congratulate my husband, Ronnie Hardaway, who is the new mayor of the Village of Lansing after 24 years of Mayor Hartel's leadership. So, yay, Ronnie.
Yay, okay, congratulations. Congratulations. I just want to take this moment, since it is Asian Pacific Islander American Heritage Month, to share some information that came our way. We want to encourage, on behalf of the Ithaca Asian American Association, I want to encourage all of us to get on board with promoting Virus Has No Nationality. This is a campaign that IEEE started last year as the coronavirus was being pinned on Asians and Asian Americans, and they were suffering a lot of violence and continue to because of it. So there's a campaign they started. It says Virus Has No Nationality, and we're happy to share information with all of you that you can share with your constituents on your Facebook, wherever that you share information. This month, usually there is a Asian Film Festival, and they're continuing to do it this year. And with inviting folks to tell their stories through our lenses, the theme, Virus Has No Nationality, a local response to the racialization of the virus. With this team, the Ithaca Asian American Association invites folks to share your story through your lenses as you interpret and express your meaning of Virus Has No Nationality. Through this film festival, as part of the celebration of Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, IEEE encourages people to be bold and brave in challenging issues of racism, sexism, xenophobia, ableism, heterosexism, classism, and all isms. We expect that all your creative expressions will inspire hopes and possibilities. The submission date for the film, your film, is Wednesday, May 19th. And the virtual film showing date is Thursday, May 27th at 7 p.m. The winners will be announced shortly after the showing. So I just wanted to put that announcement out there. If you know of individuals, please encourage them to participate. And for all of us, you know, participating in the viewing of the virtual film showing would be a great show of support for our Asian American Pacific Islander citizens here in Tompkins County. Martha.
Thank you, Leslyn. Another little congratulations, not so little, to the group that's putting together the Carpenter Park development, the Cuga Health, and a variety of other folks, but we just learned this past week that the Carpenter Park Affordable Housing Project that's part of that whole development will receive low-income tax credit dollars worth $3.3 million, which will help them build 42 affordable units, and that building will be kind of on your way into the farmers market. Just to, when you drive in there on the left, it'll be a new building tucked in next to what will be the new community gardens. So they've been waiting for this a long time, and congratulations to that team. Also, just want to congratulate folks who celebrate Cinco de Mayo for tomorrow. So thank you.
Thank you, Martha. Mike Lane and then Ann Corman.
Last week, on a cold and blustery day in the city of Ithaca, I came down for an event that I was very pleased to attend on the Commons, and that was sponsored by TCAT, introducing their new electric buses to our county. Beautiful, sleek, new buses, seven of them, that will be used on all the routes. They had representatives from the company from South Carolina came to be a part of the celebration. Kind of felt sorry for them because they were just in business suits. The rest of us at least had our winter coats on because it was so cold. But they came, and we heard our chair, Leslie McBean Claiborne, give a nice comments. We heard our former colleague Anna Kellis give nice comments, as well as other representatives from the city and from the company, and of course from TCAT. And Dan was there, and I'm sure Deborah was there, and other folks that were there to show what we can do as a leader, one of the few cities that have electric buses, a few counties, I should say, as well. But it was cold. Of course, it was warm and sunny in Dryden. I just want to make sure you know that. But congratulations to TCAT. And it wasn't only a day or two later, there was one of those electric buses at the bus stop in front of the post office in Dryden Village.
Oh, thank you, Mike. Thank you for that. One of the other good things about that was seeing the students from New Roots. It's good to have our young people involved.
Yes.
New Roots, I think, had also gotten an award, which I was trying to find so that I can mention them. Annie, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to mention that I stopped at one of my favorite places to get some food in Ithaca, Shortstop Deli, this past weekend, and I was happy to see a large banner that said the virus has no nationality. So thank you to Shortstop for having that put up. And I also wanted to reiterate what you said in, regarding the training that, so it's called Bystander Intervention to Stop Anti-Asian American Harassment and Xenophobia Workshop. I'll resend that out to the legislators. Kenneth sent that out to us from our Office of Human Rights. Dr. Clark, I mean, sent that out. But I'll send it out again because it was a couple of weeks ago. We can sign up. It's on May 14th. At noon, and it's only 1 hour, and anybody from the public can go sign up for bystander training, and you go to ihollaback.org, ihollaback.org, so they have bystander training and other trainings, so encouraging people to get involved. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Annie. Thanks for finding that information. Martha.
Thanks, Leslie, for a second bite. I just realized I was going to talk about the 50,000 vaccinations sort of press conference and celebration last week, but when we have our COVID report, but I want to make sure we talk about it right up front because we don't, in case people leave the meeting, it's a really, really big deal that our community has passed the half of, you know, 55,000 vaccinations so far, I believe. So it was a press conference last week where we had folks from New York State, from the Department of Health, Roanne Destito from the Department of, she's from the Department of State, and of course our partners from Cuga Health and the leaders in the health department and the EOC. Frank Krupa and a lot of other health department staff in the audience. It's really a testament to this community's belief in science, which I think is to be celebrated, shouldn't be taken for granted, and this community's understanding of the need to put the health of every one of us and our neighbors and family members first, and to collaborate. So the collaboration that we really celebrate is just been really proven to be a hallmark of this community in the past 14 months. So something like 55,000, maybe I'm sure Frank will update us later. Vaccinations, and it was announced the lowest infection rate in New York State, which I hadn't realized. So since the days before we had vaccinations, still that we were able to follow the science and keep our infection rate down, So this community has a lot to be proud of. And to thank Cayuga Health Systems and especially our health department for that leadership. So just want to make sure people recognize that marker. And of course, Leslin gave a great speech and challenged everybody. Never enough, right, Leslin? Leslin says less than 70,000. I can't remember if you put a date on it, like by June or whatever, but
yep.
We're not done yet. So thank you for your comments that day, Leslin, as well.
No worries. Thanks, Martha. I was going to mention it, but I thought I didn't want to steal Frank and Jason and Amy's thunder. I'm sure they'll tell us a whole lot more about it. And I just want to thank you all for bearing with us. I just want to lift up the New Roots School. I just mentioned they were there at the TCAD event. They were one of the New York U.S. Department of Education Green Ribbon Schools, and they were recognized. They got this beautiful email on the 22nd of April recognizing them for their sustainability efforts, for the work they've been doing towards preserving our planet, for their environmental impact, reducing the environmental impact, and so on and so forth. So please join me in giving a big old cheer and kudos to New Roots Charter School for being recognized as one of the U.S. Department of Education Green Ribbon Schools. Thank you. All right, let's move on and get through the rest of this real quickly. No reports or appointments from me at this point. I'm going to no special presentations or discussion. Reports from the County Administrator, County Attorney, and Director of Finance. County Administrator, Jason Molina.
Thank you, Leslin. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Well. We have a good report, and I'll start to line it up here. Let me get it going. One thing I would like to add, just to piggyback on what Mike Lane was saying at the TCAD event, while I couldn't make it, I did hear it was a great event and that all the underwriters, including Cornell, also gave some good comments. And I spoke to Scott Vanderpool the other day about the electric buses, and they're pretty excited about having and adding more to their fleet as they start to transition over. So I think it's an exciting opportunity for them and for the community. Mm-hmm. Here is can everybody see that? The I think you're all familiar. I see some weary faces. You're all relentless and like, I don't want to see this again. So you're all familiar with this slide and what we're about to go through. I think we're pushing well over 200 slides now. I think it could be a novel in and of itself. So maybe it could be published. And one thing that came up that we had a meeting up at the EOC today, I'll just as a sidebar. We had a leadership meeting up there, and the blue boxes are up there. I don't know if you remember the blue boxes where we put masks in for people that were making masks. And, perhaps maybe we should, at the end of this, county should publish this, which will probably be 300 slides at the end of the day, and then put it in one of those blue boxes and bury it as a time capsule.
Or burn it.
or something on those lines. So we can all remember it 100 years from now.
Jason.
The Historical Society is keeping track of what's happened during the pandemic, so they should have it and archive it.
Well, there are plenty. You're talking about the presentation here?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I honestly think it's something that could be published just because it's a chronological history, literally 2 weeks at a time, of what happened. Which I think is pretty remarkable when you think about it. And I highly doubt anybody has this in detail as we went through it week by week by week. So that's exciting. And we can get one of the blue boxes if someone wants one. Real quick, cases have continued, and Frank will get into more of the data. Cases continue to go down a little bit. Unfortunately, we had one death over the last time we met. What seems to continue to increase is the number of first doses, so 62,000 first doses. So the 50,000 mark is old news. It's now the 60,000 mark, which is great to see. A series of executive orders, most recently, probably notably, is that this week, I believe it was this week, the governor announced that a lot of reopening will take place on May 19th. More guidance to come as it follows, and there's a little bit of a lag from what he announces and when it comes out. But nonetheless, we continue to keep an eye out at it. Something that always continues to come up and we'll continue to keep an eye on is, what about open meetings? What about virtual meetings? How will that change? I suspect it will change within the next 30 to 90 days, my guess, but we'll wait and see what happens. And I know at the upcoming GO meeting, there'll be some discussion, and Dominic and myself and Greg and Lauren will be present as well to talk about what that could mean short-term and long-term. A lot of small pop-ups that are happening. Frank and Amy will talk more about this, but, changing the approach with vaccinations than what was initially started. We initially started the mass site, the CMC site was the primary place, and now these pop-up clinics are starting. Pop-up pods are probably where we're going to transition into to bring vaccine to people, to try to get individuals that otherwise may not go to the vaccine site, the mass site, to get vaccinated. And we have some slides a little bit on the event that took place at the mall last week as well. Here is, something you're all familiar with hours worked, that again doesn't go down, it only goes up, and costs related to. I think this week we have a meeting, maybe next week internally, to start to sift through some of these costs as to what we expect to get reimbursed, what we don't think we'll get reimbursed. And, one of the things that we're probably going to want to look at is, while a lot of the regular hours paid, overtime, comp time, are not a cost that could be reimbursed through FEMA, they very well may be costs that can be reimbursed through the ARP funding. And that may be an access and ability to justify and capture some of that funding, because you can pay for COVID expenses. So we're trying to sift through that so that we're prepared for that discussion when it comes, and when more guidance comes on the American Recovery Plan funding. I'm going to turn it over to Frank now, or Amy, to talk a little bit more about some of the data and metrics.
Great. Thanks, Jason. Data, obviously, we're down to 44 active cases, which is the lowest we've been, I believe, since back in October of last year. We are still seeing cases, and unfortunately, we're going to be reporting 15 cases tomorrow morning from today. So we're going to see this kind of go up and down a little bit, but as long as we're continuing to trend down, we'll be okay with that. So generally good news across the board with disease prevalence. This is our positivity rate. Jason talked about it being the lowest in the state. A lot of that has to do with the sheer volume of testing that has been done. So obviously that impacts the positivity rate. But just if you look at raw numbers, even in our region, we are below per capita, I think, any other county in our region as far as actual cases. So again, good news across the board on the disease front. Vaccination progress continues. You can see the lines for us locally. Second doses beginning to close the gap on first doses, as well as you're starting to see the plateau that we've experienced. We have now hit the tipping point where we have more vaccine than arms. And so we are, as Jason alluded to, shifting from the large-scale mass vaccination model to smaller pods, more strategically located. We wanted to run through the demographics at this point to kind of look at them at the point in time of that tipping point, because it's important to know, as we were moving through that mass vaccination phase of things, we did a pretty good job of matching the demographics within our county. So here across age groups, I think we've exceeded the percentage in each age group. Obviously, under 16 are not eligible, so there's not going to be vaccination happening there. But generally, we've done a good job of distributing across age groups. I think the same can be said for race. as well. We're fairly close in each of the categories. The other, an unknown, really it makes it hard for us to know for certain where we are, but it's good to see that folks that were willing to answer those questions when registering. We've done a fairly good job of reaching populations across our race demographics. Same with ethnicity. Again, the unknowns is the part that makes it hard to know, but it's good to see that we're fairly close with our Hispanic population, even with that almost 17% of unknown. So again, we just wanted to kind of put these up as we're at this point in time, where we're shifting to needing to get the vaccine to the folks that have not yet gotten it, but that we have a lot of, we have work to do across all of our demographics. And I think we've done a fairly decent job so far. Jason talked about the pop-ups. I don't really like the word pop-up. I think the governor coined it, and we've all just kind of adopted to it. But these pods that we're operating in more in a smaller fashion are occurring. We've done. We actually have our second dose clinic for LACS Saturday, so we'll be getting the folks their second dose. We've been out to Newfield, 57 doses. We have over 70 people scheduled for Dryden tomorrow evening. We're doing an Enfield clinic at the Enfield Food Bank, food distribution event there on Monday. It will be totally walk-in, so we're really targeting the folks that come to the food bank. So we're going to make it a low barrier to be able to just walk up and get vaccinated while they're there picking up their food. We did also do a pod in Groton as well, and I think we did 67 folks there. We'll be going back out to Groton for a second dose clinic in a couple of weeks.
I forgot to mention, there's a typo on this slide. It should really read 50 doses of a plan for the crown jewel of Tompkins County, that being the Village of Dryden.
Yes. Thank you for that correction.
We'll make sure
Sunshine. The Sunshine Community.
Sorry.
All right. And there's continued work going on. We have just launched a form on our website for businesses or other organizations. If they can identify they have more than 10 people that want to be vaccinated, we will work to try to bring vaccinations to them. So there is an opportunity to fill out a form on our website to let us know of interest of that. So that's new today, actually. The reopening restrictions have been, are being lifted pretty significantly. As Jason said, on May 19th, most of the gathering issues and business issues are going to either be removed and or increased. I think the underlying factor that we're still trying to understand is there is an expectation of that 6 foot of separation, particularly for unvaccinated individuals and businesses needing to continue to navigate that. But I think generally this is good news as we start to see reopening occur, aligning with the vaccination rates increasing and our disease numbers decreasing.
So as Martha and Leslin said earlier, last week we had, thank you, Frank, for that. Last week we had an event, UHS, United Health Systems, is present, who has been our kind of the lead on the vaccination hub. OGS, Commissioner Rosita was present as well. That's her on the bottom right. Leslin was able to give some great words. Dr. Stallone gave some wonderful words. Frank gave some words, a compliment, and it was really good to get the recognition of 50,000. Like I said, old news now. Now we're at the 62,000 at first doses. We got complimented by the commissioner, who is the liaison for the Mohawk Valley region, who said, that they needed to get their numbers up and they needed to see how we did it here in Tompkins County. And that primarily comes, I think you all know, from the collaborative approach that we've had in working with our partners at CHS, working with our partners in the community, Cornell, IC, Higher Ed, all together. And that was really the message that I think I gave to the commissioner, is that that's how we were able to do this. no one was looking for that credit. Everyone was working collectively towards that shared vision of protecting the public. So it was great to get recognized. Needless to say, you know, Amy, Frank, and Dom are in that picture. We had other staff present. Both Ruby Deanna came, Lisa came, other staff, Sam Hilson came, folks that have been at the EOC, all spending the better part of the past 14 months committed to this effort. So it was great recognition. We really appreciate it. We have had, you know, Compass County has tested more than any other county in New York State. In certain instances, we've tested more than some states have tested just in our county alone, and probably some countries when you get into it across the globe. We have the lowest infection rate of the county, and we're also leading the charge in vaccination rates than any county in the state of New York. So good metrics to be on top of and good things to be proud of, and it was great to get recognized by the state and for that effort. So I think that's all we have. I'll stop sharing for you.
Jason, if I could just jump in, I know you're always super anxious to talk about our successes. I just want to correct some of the numbers. We're at about 52 or 53,000 that we've done here locally, first and second doses. The 62,000 is first doses that has been administered for the county, irregardless of a location. So still to be celebrated, but just wanted to make that clarification.
We're still the best in the state.
That we are.
I don't count Hamilton County. I don't care where they are. I only have 4,400 people. We don't count that.
We are the best.
We are.
We are the crown jewel.
The crown.
I'll be crown jewel.
Absolutely. If you have any questions, we're happy to take them.
I see a bunch of blue things on my screen, but I'm not paying any attention to them. None whatsoever. Mike Lane.
I'm just wondering, reading another article about it today out of Pfizer's producers, that they're getting to think about the third dose and about annually thereafter. Are we thinking about these things? Are we wondering, are we going to be prepared if we have to go that direction?
The last part, yes, we will be prepared. We don't yet know what that's going to look like. Obviously, the science still has to evolve. My hope would be that we'll get to a point where the healthcare system is designed and able to administer that in the same fashion that we do the flu vaccine on an annual basis as well. So we're still waiting for that to evolve. But I can assure you, whatever comes, we'll have a plan in place to make sure folks have access to the vaccine.
I would expect no less. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll put on my list. Leslie Schill.
Hi. Thank you all so much. Really, kudos for the amazing work, Jason, Frank, your teams. Really, we have something. Amazing going on here, I think, and it's a great story, and I'm so glad to hear that you got the recognition, because you guys really deserve it. This county has done something. Just wanted to ask, I heard from a resident this morning that was wondering if we could get some walk-in clinics downtown, saying that she knew folks that would be interested, that need to get the vaccine, really interested in these pop-up clinics. I was sharing the information. Can we get something downtown for walk-in vaccines? And then my next question is the 12 to 15-year-olds and what you guys are thinking about for the younger set. I've got a 15-year-old, so I'm interested personally, but I'm sure many people are.
Sure. On the walk-in front, pretty much every clinic that we run now has walk-in availability, whether it be at the mall or these pods we're doing in the rural parts of the county. As far as having walk-ins downtown, we've had some conversations with CHS about the future of both testing and vaccinations downtown and what that might look like. So we're in the discussion phases of that, but no solid answers on it just yet. But definitely recognize that we need to have walk-in capability. I would also share that most pharmacies have vaccine and are generally taking walk-ins. I believe the president today said that he was going to mandate that of the pharmacies that are getting federal vaccine. So I think from that perspective, there will be other options besides just the county and CHS for folks to walk in. On the children, I think we're all anxiously awaiting the review of the Pfizer vaccine. My understanding is the ACIP, Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, which makes the recommendations on vaccines to the FDA and CDC, is meeting on Wednesday to review the data related to Pfizer. I did pre-book a bolus of Pfizer, trying to be proactive in hopes that it does get approved, so we would have it on hand to be able to begin that process. We have had some initial conversations with our school districts, primarily to this point about the 15 and 16 year olds, but I think more generally about how we will reach children in that age group once the vaccine is available. But we absolutely will be looking to make those vaccines available once they're cleared for that age group.
Okay. Amanda?
Yeah, thank you. And I would just echo, you know, gratitude and appreciation for all that you guys have done. I know it's been endless work, and you deserve a lot of recognition. My question, just following up on the walk-ins, my mother, who lives in Newfield, is a retired nurse, and she has been volunteering up at the site to give shots over the past month or two, and has said it's just been a great experience and a lot of work for her, but she's really happy to be participating, and I'm very proud of her. Anyway, she was up there last week for the walk-in clinic and said that it was pretty quiet. And I was just wondering how many walk-ins you had on that clinic.
Yeah, there were 51 walk-ins, I believe, at the mall that day.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Martha?
Thank you. Are we using Tioga Street anymore, the dental office? We were using it for testing.
Yes, they're still there. I think the hospital is looking for something more long-term, more reasonably sized and appropriate for the work that they're trying to do there. So there's conversations going on. We just don't have a kind of a final solution on what it will look like.
Okay. On the... Great to see the demographic breakdowns. Do we have a breakdown by gender of who's getting vaccinated?
That's a good point. We can do that. Well, I don't know it off the top of my head, but we can absolutely get that.
Okay. You don't know it off the top of your head, Frank?
You found the one thing, Martha.
You're really, really slacking here. Then a science kind of question. There's a lot of confusion about, well, if you're vaccinated, then everything's all, you know, just go back to normal. The way I understand the nuance, the challenge that we have is that we still don't know how communicable, like those of us who are vaccinated, if we're exposed, can we then communicate?
Mm-hmm.
The virus to other people who aren't vaccinated, even if we don't have symptoms ourselves. Do we know any more about that? Because that's sort of like the linchpin of how back to normal we can truly be once we're vaccinated. Do you know any more about that?
Yeah, so the science hasn't evolved all the way yet, right? It takes some time, obviously, to get enough people vaccinated and then to be able to run trials on transmissibility, coupled with the vaccinations happening as disease incidence is decreasing. So it's a bit harder to know because we're not in a high prevalence time. What we do know about the vaccines is that it is extremely effective at reducing the impact on the individual, i.e. getting sick, right, or needing to be hospitalized. So we know that much. We can't definitively say yet about transmission. We believe it is. I mean, generally, that's how these work, right? If we're able to vaccinate folks, it helps prevent transmission, but we can't say that definitively yet because the science hasn't evolved. So that's part of why we're still asking people to follow some of the public health guidance even once they're vaccinated, not only because of the transmission issue, but because no vaccine is perfect. And until we can get to that herd immunity point where the disease has minimal places that it can infect, we want to limit transmission, not just to protect any individual person, but the more that the disease can continue to move between the vectors, it has more opportunity to mutate. And that's when we don't know if those mutations will be, if the vaccines will be effective on them, will they be more transmissible, will they cause more significant disease for the people that, that are infected. So there's a lot of pieces to the puzzle on why we're asking people to continue to follow some of the guidance even once they're fully vaccinated.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thanks.
Thank you. Annie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jason, thank you for your report again. I wanted to see if I had this right. I don't know if it was in today's presentation or if you could add this as a slide. But so Tompkins County has 60.6% of our population with at least their first vaccination, and Hamilton County has 63.3%, so we're narrowing it down. I've been watching both. We're down to only a difference of 2.7%. And did I hear it right that you're not going to leave Tompkins County until we beat Hamilton County?
Yeah. So you have to understand, when we do a pop-up in Tompkins County, that's like, you know, that's like every time they vaccinate like four or five people, it goes up a percent. I mean, they have like 4,500 people that live in the county. So that's why I don't count them as part of this calculation. You can't count them. They're not the same. In fact, let me rephrase.
Uh-huh.
Out of all the metropolitan counties, we are number one.
Okay. It sounds a little bit like fuzzy math and delineation, but I'll accept that answer. That answer is correct.
Okay.
Another question, my last question is, I believe there was something sent out a little while ago. I don't know if it was, who sent it out by, but our stats of vaccination by zip code. And I looked at it briefly and it didn't make sense to me. There was like 100% for like 14850. So do you guys remember that?
Yeah, so that data is based off of the address that the individual provides when they're vaccinated, and then it's up against census data, right? So we know that census data isn't exact. So for those ones that show 100%, there's been as many people as are accounted in the census data for that zip code have been vaccinated. That's why you see that way. We know it's not. We know we haven't gotten everybody in that zip code, but it's just an anomaly with the data because it's not precise.
The other piece on that, too, I'm off camera, but I'll still comment, is the data for that is 15. They use the census data for those over 15, whereas the New York State tracker, which is where you can see Hamilton and Tompkins, is all of our population. So it's a little different, but it does give us an opportunity to look at it a little closer by a zip code, which is why we have chosen where we have for those rural pods.
Okay, and I didn't see that compared to Hamilton County zip code, but that can be next time. All right, thank you, everybody.
All right, thank you all so very kindly. You know, I want to emphasize, but I know this is a little tedious, this portion of it, but we do it. And I appreciate Jason and Frank, Amy, everyone, so that we can all be informed. We have a chance to ask all our questions and so on and so forth. So thanks for bearing with us. I think I saw on your first slide that office hours are still happening. Are they still happening? And people getting information about the vaccines and effects and any science behind it and so on. Are those office hours still happening?
This is Dominic. There are a series of office hours being planned now that we have some of the rural pods. We have one tomorrow with Dr. Deirdre Blake from Cuba Health System. And we have one, I believe that'll end up being next week, another one offered entirely in Spanish. We're trying to offer more opportunities now that some of the information has changed. Now Johnson & Johnson is available, there are additional questions for different age groups and such. So we are reconstituting that effort, and we're focusing it on people who haven't been vaccinated yet in those different communities who might be going to the walk-up clinics for the rural pod clinics.
Fantastic. Good to see you, Don. And my second quick question is the requests. There was something about the forms and being able to request vaccination if you're an office or something like that.
Yes. There's a form on the website now.
There's a form on the website now that folks can fill out and request that.
Correct.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you all again for all your very hard work in being number one, lowest infection rate, highest vaccination and testing rate. You know, we rock on. Go ahead, Tom Hiscani. Okay. Anything else from you, County Administrator?
No, I have nothing else. Thank you.
All right. County Attorney, anything from you, Jonathan?
No, I do not have a report.
Nice lighting.
Yeah, it's plant grow lights behind me.
Okay, I was just going to say strobe.
What are you growing?
I thought it was strobe.
Well, I'm at a friend's house, and it's what's tomatoes growing.
All right, Ron. Right.
That's your story,
right? How's that get sidebarred? Director of Finance, Rick Schneider. Rick, you got to do something about your lighting. It's kind of boring.
Strobe light to go. That's a strobe light to go along with Jonathan's tomato.
Grow and strobe lights. Go ahead. Anything from you, Rick?
Yes, a very short one. I'm going to try to share my screen here with you quickly. Should be looking at a casino revenue report. Is that right?
Yes, sir. You can see it.
Thank you. We have the county's portion of first quarter casino revenues coming in at 0.3% less than last year's first quarter. The reason why it's a little bit less is because the impact of COVID hadn't really hit us until March of last year, so we had a relatively strong quarter, even though it was lower than previous quarters. You can see on the table that we came in this year at $417,000 compared to $418,000 last year. So we were only down 0.3%.
That's pretty good compared.
Right. And that's only $1,162 less than last year. What's particularly good about this is even though we only have one quarter in, you can see how dismal we did in 2020, only achieving a little over $800,000 for the year, where in the previous years we were in the $2 million range. If our first quarter receipts for each of the next three quarters for the until the end of the year will come in at about 1.6, 1.7 million for casino revenues. That's just looking forward, and most of the quarters before that and previous years were higher than that. But if we just have $417,000 coming in each quarter, we'll come in at about $1.6, $1.7 million by the end of the year. The good news is that our budget only asked for $675,000 for this revenue line item, so we could very well see an additional $1 million over budget for casino revenues.
All right.
That's all I have for tonight.
Well, thank you. Not too bad a report there. I'm sorry I didn't get there to make sure my $162 counted. Can you stop screen share so we can any questions, Sir Rick? All right, good news, Rick. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right. There are no staff. I do want to acknowledge that Lee Dillon had joined us a little later. She was from TCA. You know, I did text her to let her know we had gone through the proclamation and she still wanted to speak, and she said, no, I'm going home. But she really appreciated and wanted to thank the legislature for the proclamation and recognizing community action. Are there any resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda? Annie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to withdraw Resolution B.
Resolution D.
I'm sorry. Resolution D, DAC ID 10086, resolution adopting a minimally invasive policy for managing the Tompkins County forests. And I'd like to withdraw that.
All right. Thank you. Any other resolutions to be withdrawn or added to the agenda?
Deborah Dawson has
to. I know. I'm waiting for her. Deborah?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I would like to add a resolution that passed at this afternoon's special BCP meeting, appointing and compensating Lisa Holmes as interim town administrator, and the that's resolution G, ID number 10101.
All right, so we need a second to add that. Martha seconds, and then we need 10 votes to add it to the agenda. Roll call.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Hsu?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Ian Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you. So that's added to the agenda. I'm going to do consent agenda, and then I might shuffle things around and just ask Deborah to take up budget committee. No, we've got some easier ones before that. We'll just keep going as is. All right, consent agenda, resolutions and appointments to be voted on as a group unless any member of the legislature requests that a resolution or appointment be instead included separately and individually as part of the business of standing or special committee. There are no appointments, but we do have Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Resolution A, scheduling a public hearing for proposed 2021 addition to the Tompkins County Agricultural District, ID 10073. And then on the Housing and Economic Development Committee, Resolution B, supporting the designation of the Finger Lakes National Heritage Area, ID 10029. And Resolution C, a resolution to extend the current...
Madam Chair, pull that, please.
Pull that one. All right. C is pulled.
Thank you.
Housing and income. All right. There's nothing else for consent. May I have a motion to accept the consent agenda? Moved by Shauna Black, seconded by Deborah Dawson. All in favor of the consent agenda. Roll call.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Hsu?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Ian Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you. That carries unanimously. Let's go quickly to standing committees. Government Operations Committee, Amanda Champion Chair.
Yes, thank you. I will be brief. We are meeting this Thursday at noon. We will be discussing we'll be going through the final set of the rules of the legislature one more time, a few more edits on that. We'll be having a discussion with numerous members of our staff about the possibility and the options for the legislature returning to chambers for our meetings. And we will also be having a very initial beginning discussion with our staff about the redistricting process and what that is going to look like. I sent you all an email with a few links and an article or two. If you're interested in participating in that discussion on Thursday, those are a few things you might want to check out ahead of time. And then I guess one other thing, I've been trying to keep you all updated about the search for the new library director, and I've sent some emails about that. Last night, there was one of the finalists gave a presentation To everyone in the public, anyone was welcome to watch that presentation and fill out a feedback survey. The second finalist will be presenting on Thursday evening. You all are more than welcome to attend. They're an hour long. You can listen to questions or you can ask questions in the chat, and then give your feedback on, you know, if you have one of these candidates is preferable to you. After that, the search committee will gather that feedback along with the feedback of staff and all the other things that have been going on and give a recommendation to the Board of Trustees. And then the board will make their final decision. So I will keep you updated on that and check your email for the links, or the links to the library presentations are on the TCPL website. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda. Any questions for Amanda? Mike Lane?
Amanda, I want to make sure everybody knows that the library director is a civil service position, unlike some of the appointments we have.
Yes, it is, and that really limited who the search committee was able to reach out to and proceed with interviews.
Thank you. Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, and Corman Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We met on, April 26th, just last week, and we had quite a few. We had a packed agenda. We had a presentation from Darby Kiley from our planning department on the draft Tompkins County Harmful Algal Bloom Strategy. And we had numerous resolutions brought forth from Cooperative Extension regarding three properties that were seeking to be added to the Tompkins County Agricultural Districts 1 and 2. We voted to have two of them proceed towards a public hearing. We voted against one of them proceeding towards that. And we had a report from the Environmental Management Council. We also spent quite a bit of time on the resolution adopting a minimally invasive policy for the Tompkins County forests. And we did not have time for the water we had the Water Resources Council did report. The Environmental Management Council did not. We ran out of time. They did not have time to report. So they're going to report next month on May 24th. And we also had a quick review of our committee goals. Deborah, did I miss anything?
I just like to emphasize for everybody's edification that the state has finally come up with the TMDL for phosphorus for Cayuga Lake. It's only been a decade in the making or whatever. The burden is going to fall pretty heavily on agriculture and particularly small agriculture because point sources are subject to speedies permits, and the assumption in the TMDL is that they're regulated and aren't a problem. The CAFOs have their own regulatory scheme, and again, the state assumes that that's effective and that they don't have any phosphorus releases. And so it's going to be farming in general, other than the CAFOs, and particularly the smaller farms that are going to have to reduce their phosphorus loading by 80%. Which is a pretty big lift for some of our smaller farmers. So if you're representing a district with some small farm residents, you might want to attend to that and submit some comments. I think they're due. Annie, correct me. Is it May 24th?
I thought, yeah, it was between the 24th and the 28th, right?
Okay. Yeah, just a heads up.
Right. And it looks like there is some money to help small farmers. I doubt that there's enough, and there's also issues of them laying out the money and are trying to have enough money for them, you know, as they're waiting for reimbursements. So there's some tricky things, but it's being worked on. But of course, we could always use more money from the state, you know, to help local farmers.
All right. Thank you very much. And thanks, Deborah, for the additional information. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Deborah Dawson, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before I get to the resolutions that are on today's agenda, I just wanted to let everyone know that we will be meeting again next Monday, and we will be hearing from Bill Talbot at TC3. They want to give us a heads up on what they're planning going forward to try to get themselves back on good financial footing. And they want input from us on their plans and anything we'd like to see from them. So if you have thoughts or interest in that, please plan to attend our meeting.
Thank you.
And we met this afternoon at 3:30 for a special meeting. We passed three resolutions. I would like to move Resolution E, Establishment of 2022 County Financial Goal, ID number 10091, and I would invite a second.
Moved by Deborah, seconded by Mike Lane. Deborah, can you share what the goal is that's in the resolution that was passed today?
I would be happy to, Madam Chair. This is a resolution that formalizes the target that we set at our budget retreat last week of a 1.89% increase in the tax levy. The resolution also acknowledges that we are in uncertain times. We're not quite sure what our situation will be in the fall. So this 1.89% isn't carved in stone, but it's an aspiration.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments on the discussion on the resolution? Annie?
Thank you. I caught just the very tail end of the special budget meeting today, but during the discussion regarding, is this going to be as the 1.98 or 1.89? Mm-hmm. Does that include maintenance of effort, or will departments have to cut back to achieve that? So I'm just wondering if that could be spoken to.
I would be happy to, although I suspect that Jason could explain it more succinctly and clearly than I could, if he's willing to do that.
I'd be happy to. So the maintenance of effort, which is what you're considering now, the 1.89%, includes contractual wage increases as well as fringe benefit increases. It also includes a variety of other expenses that we identified. So, for example, the capital appropriation increase, town plowing increase, some mandate increases, and then some other increases in revenue. That all nets out to 1.89. What it does not include is any increase over the 2021 target for supported agencies, including IAED, or the restoration of departmental budgets based on what we discussed with some certain departmental budgets that were cut last year. So it's only on what we would consider maintenance of effort is contractual wage increases, fringes, and then some mandate increases. Does that answer your question, Annie?
Are there things that aren't included that we should be aware of, then, if those are the things that are included?
Yeah, so the only other thing that I would say beyond maintenance of effort are the supported agencies, which includes Human Service Coalition and other agencies. That does not include a 2% increase over 2021's budget. IAED, which is considered a support agency as well, and then the departmental restorations. The other thing that isn't included because we don't know is the TCAT, if there's a TCAT increase, TCAT, or TC3.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Jason. Martha?
So, yeah, I was going to bring this up on the next one, on the next resolution, but so in other words, just to be perfectly clear for the public and anybody else, the 1.89, so we have negotiated salary increases for staff. The 1.89 includes that, but for sponsored agencies, any increases they have with their staff are not included.
That would be a target.
Well, to be totally honest and fair with you, we don't know what their structure is. We don't know what increases they may or may not give. We don't really seek that information. So we really wouldn't know that.
Right. But in other words, in that, you know, it's maybe relevant to the next one where it says, for grants to specific not-for-profit agencies, fiscal targets shall be equal to the amount approved in the 2021 adopted budget. So they have flat dollars. It's not kind of same amount of effort and whatever that costs you for health insurance and pensions and salaries. It's actually flat dollars. For our staff, our own staff, it's the effort is covered, including increases for pensions, healthcare, and salaries. There's just a difference. I just wanted to make sure I understand that right. Is that correct, Jason?
There is no increase in supported agencies over the 2021 budget.
Right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Let's vote.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Show?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Leslie McLean Claiborne?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Yeah.
And so the next one is a companion to the one we just passed, Resolution F, establishing guidelines and fiscal targets for all county budgeting units for the preparation of the 2022 budget. And I would move that.
Moved by Deborah, seconded by Martha Robertson. Discussion? Martha?
Thank you, Leslie. I can't remember, Jason, is the library one of these sponsored agencies?
Yes. I think.
So they're included under number one there. Okay, like TC3 or TCAT. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? Thank you. Let's vote.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Shield?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Mori?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Okay, that carries. Go
Thank
ahead,
you, Deborah. Madam Chair. Yeah, so the next agenda is the next resolution on the agenda is the one we added, necessitated by the announcement of Jason's departure. Before I introduce this, I just want to thank Jason from the bottom of my heart. You're the only county administrator I've ever worked with, so I don't really have a basis for comparison, but I've learned a tremendous amount from you. Your work ethic's admirable. Your judgment is unfailingly sound, and you're going to be sorely missed. So with that, I'd like to move the resolution appointing and compensating Lisa Holmes
as interim county administrator. That's resolution G, ID number 10101.
Seconded by Mike Lane. Discussion. Mike Lane. Rich, did I see your hand up? Sorry.
Raising it to second.
I share Deborah's comments about the loss of our administrator. Livingston County is going to experience his good work. But we are really fortunate here to have a deputy of the quality of Lisa Holmes, who has agreed, thank you, to be our interim county administrator while we do a search. And I think we're in good hands, and I think her appointment will resonate well among our departments and employees, over 700 of them, not to mention members of our community, agencies, and other things. So, Lisa, thank you, and I'm certainly going to vote for this.
You know, if the federal government can do it, so can we. I remember when Senator Schumer was here visiting and he had to leave quickly to go back so that he can swear in the sergeant of arms. And I forgot who else, but it was, you know, history making that the Speaker of the House was a woman, the sergeant of arms was a woman, and I forget the third position, maybe somebody will remember what it is, was a woman. And it was the first time in the history of the federal government that, you know, that was the case. And here in Tompkins County, we are known for being history makers, and here we are once again doing so with this appointment of Lisa as her first woman to head up county administration, as far as I know. I don't think we've ever had that. We had some who were behind the scenes and who were really the county administrator but didn't have the title. But historic, but also very, very good choice. You know, Lisa, we've known each other for a while. We've worked well together. And I certainly do appreciate everything that you have brought to this county, and especially your willingness to jump in where we need help the most. May not be an area that's at the top of your list of expertise, but you make it look easy. You go in there and you do the work, and you're so appreciated. I was happy to talk with you about this, and knowing and just hearing your just general good vibe that I felt we gonna be all right. And I also do want to, at the same time, you know, give kudos to the entire team in county administration. Jason, Lisa, Amy, just amazing work pulling in Dominic and Deanna in the middle of a pandemic and building the sort of working group that you all have that I feel confident and strong in my confidence that everything is going to be all right, because you all shared. You didn't just work as each other. You knew who can take on what when. You cross-trained. You stood on the expertise and wisdom of each other. And it showed and has shown here in Tompkins County in so many of the things that we've been doing. So thank you again for stepping up. Thank you, County Administration Leadership Team. Thank you, Jason and Lisa. Look forward to working with you in the little bit of time that I have left in this legislature, in this leadership role. Thank you. Martha.
Well, Leslie, you took everything I was going to say with just one or two exceptions, but I certainly second everything and second the thanks. Best of luck in Livingston County. But Lisa, it really is a pleasure. You were here when I first came on the board. And I asked you at budget today, kind of what your background, how long you've been here. And you started in 1998 in the Office for the Aging, and then rose to the director of the office. I remember being on that search committee, and it was really no contest. I don't have any idea who else we were considering, but it was a very clear choice. And you've proven at every stage of your career at the county, proven that you've had what it takes and what we needed, and probably no more poignantly than in your 18 months as human resources interim or acting human resources director this past year and a half, where you just, there was so much thrown at you, and you really handled it with such grace and skill, and it's it really is I'm very, very grateful that you're stepping up to do this, and I wish you good luck in the position. We're going to work with you and everything we can to make this whole transition successful. Thank you for everything.
Can I say a few words? I just want to thank you all for your kind words and your confidence. This is certainly a bittersweet time for me. It's been such a pleasure working with Jason, and I'd really rather he not be leaving, but it's been such a pleasure working with him. I echo all of your sentiments. We've learned and benefited a great deal from his being at the helm. I'm happy to be serving the county during this interim period, and we do have a lot of great initiatives underway that will continue, and not the least of which, we have the challenge of the budget season coming ahead of us. So I'm, again, grateful, as you are, for our skilled staff here in County Admin who will help and collaborate, and I thank you all for your support during this transitional period as we launch a search for a permanent administrator. So thanks.
Thank you so very much, Lisa. All right, let's vote on this.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Shill?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Definitely yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Absolutely.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Oh, yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
That carries unanimously. Thank you, Lisa, and congrats. All right. End the meeting right there. Maybe we have to go through the rest of it. All right, we will. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Henry is not here. Andy, are you able to report at all on anything coming out of WDIC?
If you could just put me at the next one. I'll look up the agenda real quick.
No problem. We'll come back to you. Housing and Economic Development Committee, Martha Robertson, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We met last on April 22nd. We will next meet on May 27th at 9:30. Let me just, should I go ahead with Resolution C?
Resolution.
Resolution C, resolution to extend the current transportation agreement with the City of Ithaca, Cornell University, and Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit Incorporated for 1 year, expiring October 9th, 2022, ID number 10070. And that was pulled because Dan Klein had some additional language, so I'll hand it off to Dan.
Thank you. Can I second it first?
Yeah. Yep, you may second it.
Thank you. Yes, yeah, so it's highlighted on our resolution. It has to do with the fact that when before TCAT became TCAT, there was a grouping of the three members that eventually became TCAT, but it wasn't officially incorporated as TCAT yet. And then when it got incorporated, there was still some paperwork, debts, or whatever from the old organization to make sure we're cleared. So that was written into the original agreement with TCAT, and as we're renewing the original transportation agreement, and as we're renewing it now, there's no longer a need to do that because that organization was dissolved in 1998, I believe. How did I do?
Sounds fun. And the language was emailed to everybody, and it was this was suggested by the TCAT attorney, Susan Brock. Is that right, Dan?
That is correct. And the City of Ithaca is passing a parallel or basically identical resolution tomorrow.
All right. So I can read it, or do you want to read it aloud so the public can hear what we're doing?
Sure. So we're inserting whereas TCAT's underwriters did not terminate the 1998 consolidation agreement, which created the joint venture when TCAT Incorporated began operations in 2005, because they wanted to make sure all joint venture liabilities were known and dealt with before they terminated the consolidation agreement. And also inserting a new resolve that says, resolved that the agreement extending the transportation agreement for 12 months include a provision terminating the consolidation agreement and TCAT joint venture, in parentheses, TCAT Incorporated's predecessor.
So with, I understand that the whereas is inserted, say, line 19, and resolved gets inserted at the existing line 31, so the line numbers would obviously change. It would be a new second resolve. Those changes are friendly.
It's friendly to you, and since Dan is the seconder, I'm supposing it's friendly to him, otherwise that would be weird.
Yes.
And I don't see any hands up with concerns or discussion about it, so can you take this to a vote?
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Show?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dave Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Mooring?
Yes.
Leslie Levine Clairborn?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
That carries. Anything else in the room?
Yeah, a couple things. One wanted just to make sure folks know that the Department of Planning and Sustainability has hired the senior planner for housing. Her name is Susan Landfried, senior planner. She will start June 1st. She has a master's of urban planning from the University of Michigan. I think her first career was as a middle school teacher in Denver, Colorado. We had some good reports at our meeting from IAED and Tom Knipe from City of Ithaca, Gary Ferguson from Downtown Ithaca Alliance about kind of the impacts on the business community of the whole pandemic and many of the creative things that they've all done to bolster to support local businesses and some of the things that they're thinking of doing, additional things that they would like to do in terms of recovery. And I really encourage that conversation so that we have a collaborative approach to the economic recovery, especially as we look at opportunities for the American Rescue Plan funds and their possible member item funds and other buckets of money that might be available. So it was a great conversation. I also want to thank Jonathan and Frank for coming to the meeting because I wanted folks to hear what legal issues and what public health issues might be relevant to us. So Jonathan helped us understand, you know, that we've had this conversation over the years of, you know, we can't spend county money. We can't give county money to businesses or individuals. So how did that work for American Rescue Plan funds where, according to the little bit we know now, we could give money to private businesses to aid in their recovery. So Jonathan was helped us understand this is a bit different than some others. That federal money is not considered taxpayer money. So, but it's not,
where it's did not, they get it?
Yeah, they print it in the basement, Dave.
So he has to wait until we see the guidance. And Jonathan, if you want to fill in, you know, or correct what I'm saying here. So we do have to wait and see what the guidance actually says when it comes out. But for the moment, it's probably going to be fine because like the HUD money that we are allowed to spend for affordable housing, these funds also have a federal source. How'd I do, Jonathan?
Okay. I mean, it's not that it's not taxpayer money. It's a little more complicated than that. It's just a New York State constitution forbids counties to give what they call gifts, which would be direct money to individuals or corporations. It generally has not applied to our federal funds because they're federal money typically directed to specific things. So they wouldn't be the sort of, because the whole idea is not to take money from the taxpayers and give it away. But usually the federal money is directed only for a certain purpose anyway. So it's not as if we're taking the taxpayer money and giving it. Like Martha said, this law is a little different than any we've had before, and we have to wait for specifics, but we'll figure it out.
Right. And so we really appreciate your coming, helping us to think through that. The whole idea of having these conversations before we have all the guidance is to just really try to be prepared and be ready to make the best, most strategic decisions that we can. And I think, I mean, it really matters, obviously matters what's legal to do. One thing you did say, Jonathan, was that contracts, we can contract with sort of nonprofits, for example. That's one thing that seems probable.
Yeah, well, under New York State law, there are a whole list of different agencies, et cetera, that a county can contract with, like museums, Better Business Bureaus, with the theory that it's not a gift because they are providing something to the community that the county might otherwise provide. But there's a whole list, and it's individual throughout New York State law, of what those organizations are.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you, and we may need to have you come back as we get more information. And Frank, I want Frank to come because one of the areas that's specifically outlined in the ARP, the press on it is that counties can use this money to support tourism entities and tourism, the tourism industry. So my question to Frank was, given the public health issues, do we really want to be promoting visitors coming here? And to what extent, you know, should we be enthusiastic about that? So that was an important conversation also. And again, Frank can jump in if I get this wrong. But the idea being that we want to make sure that people know that our businesses follow the best science, follow the public health guidance, that this is a safe community, that we welcome visitors, and whatever the kind of state guidance turns out to be, we're certainly going to follow that and respect that. And in fact, Peggy Coleman from the Convention Visitors Bureau mentioned that we might be able to really advertise that we're a safe community and be able to bring people here with greater confidence than perhaps going other places. So, and the tourism folks mentioned that our main feeder areas are New Jersey, Connecticut, and sort of downstate New York. So as we see the disease prevalence going down in those areas, I think we can go ahead and enthusiastically promote tourism to our area. So those are kind of the main things. Oh, just one last thing. We have a resolution that went through the consent agenda supporting the Finger Lakes National Heritage Area. This is there's a feasibility study that's being contemplated, so that our resolution was supporting that feasibility study to be done by the National Park Service, and we hope that folks will promote this and try to get the comment period is through June 1st, and we want to make sure that this happens. It would be a great opportunity for our region. So that's what I got.
Thank you. Annie, you have something, Annie, if I come back to you? Or?
Sure. I can just say just a couple quick notes that I remember from the meeting. And so we had a report from Deanna Carithers, our Chief Equity and Diversity Officer, summarizing the accomplishments that and projects she's been working on since she's been here. And as people know, she's done a ton of stuff and is in the process of doing a lot more projects for the community. I'm sorry, for the Tompkins County, and including a lot of our employees. What she was working on recently was doing several forums for debriefing regarding the Derek Chauvin the resolution on that, his indictment. And then we also had someone from Human Resources, Kit Gephardt, give us an update on some funding that's changing a little bit for emergency housing. There was a report from Team Jedi and Office of Human Rights, and we voted in favor of the proclamation of the Asian Pacific Islander American Heritage Month. And since that's a committee now that only meets every other month, the next meeting will be in June, which is also LGBTQ month. So I'll be talking to Henry about doing a proclamation for that. And also there are a lot of plans for some activities and forums to celebrate Juneteenth, which is June 19th. And if you're not sure what that is, please look it up. There's tons of information online. And we'll also be providing more information as that gets closer. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Annie. Thanks for reporting. All right. Let's power through the rest of this quickly. Downtown Facilities, Dave McKenna, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Downtown Facilities has not met. We are scheduled to meet on 5/13, in a week from Thursday. Whether we do or not will depend a lot on what we hear in the executive session this evening. So check the calendar and see if the meeting is still scheduled. That's all I can say at this point. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Public Safety Committee, Rich John, Chair.
Thank you, Leslin. The Public Safety Committee is scheduled to meet May 20th at 3 o'clock. I anticipate we will be continuing to receive reports on the planning for the Reimagining Public Safety Initiative. My only other note is that our jail population as of yesterday is at 34. And so that's come down quite a bit from where it was last month.
Thank you, Rich. Deborah Dawson, question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, Rich, did the state finally come pick up its state ready?
I believe, yes, they are starting to pick them up.
Okay, great.
And I think that Ray Bunce, I don't want to speak for him, but he thought that the numbers would probably settle out somewhere in the 20s.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Rich? All right. Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Black, Chair.
Thank you. We will meet Monday, May 17th at 1 p.m., and Frank Krupa and his crew will be coming in and talking a little bit about gun violence and its role in public health. So everyone is encouraged to join us if you'd like to be part of that conversation. Thank you.
It's a really great topic to be talking about right now. Thank you. Any questions for Shauna? Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Mike Landshear.
We will meet on the 20th of May. Among other things, we will have discussions about the reimbursement policy for Bridge New York and the towns that are building bridges. And we will also be talking about use of the federal stimulus funds with respect to the airport.
Cool. Any questions to Mike Lane? Okay. Tompkins in the Governmental Relations Committee, Martha Robertson, Chair.
Thank you, Leslie. We last met on April 13th. We're going to meet next Tuesday, May 11th at 10:30. We will be talking about the effort at the state level for redistricting, and put some material in the committee packet. It's a live issue, and we know we're losing the census data that came out last week. New York State will be losing one district, and although we expect it'll probably be tied up in court for a while, but it looks like we'll probably be losing a district. So it's going to be, for Tompkins County, a really pivotal issue this year. We'll also be talking about, Jason will be bringing some information about civil service with respect to law enforcement, and also disciplinary reform for accountability for law enforcement as well, that we might be able to use together with NYSAC. And finally, Leslin and I had a conversation. Did I mention this before? I think I mentioned this at a budget this afternoon about earmarks. We had heard earlier that from Congressman Reed's office that there were going to be sort of earmarks through the House of Representatives, not the same as kind of the member items that we used to be used to, but a way for localities to sort of push particular projects or initiatives. So that also now will be happening in the Senate. And so Amanda Spellacy was giving us a heads up, a little bit of the guidelines. It looks like the guidance on that and criteria and the application forms will be coming out this week, with a deadline for for May 17th. So really short time turnaround on that. And and she encouraged nonprofits to apply, or if there's work that municipal governments have that they would like to support, they probably will do better if they can work together with a nonprofit applicant. So as we think through this, I've got a lot more information, but that's just sort of the headline. So just want to give people a heads up on that. So, and I think we may end up actually doing a resolution on redistricting to see if we can ask for consideration to keep Tompkins County in one state senate district and one congressional district would be important for us. So that'll be next week.
All right. Thank you, Martha. Any questions to Martha?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you all very much. Let's take up the minutes of the previous meeting. May I have someone move the minutes, please? Moved by Leslie Shaw, seconded by Deborah Dawson. Any corrections, deletions, additions, discussion of the minutes? All in favor of the minutes?
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Shaw?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Sean Black?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Oh, yes.
Sean?
Sorry.
Did your dog plug this thing back in?
My dog unplugged my Wi-Fi.
Mine got stuck, too.
All right.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
I haven't plugged the Wi-Fi.
Buttercup's at fault.
Yeah, sorry, my cats were trying to unplug my Wi-Fi. Yeah.
I'm voting yes. Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Mori?
Yes.
Leslie McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
13-9-0 no's.
Thank you. That carries unanimously. There are no unfinished business. However, may I have a motion to go into executive session for purposes of discussing real estate negotiations? Moved by Leslie Show. May I have a second, please? Seconded by Mike Sigler. All in favor of going into executive session, roll call vote.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Show?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Donna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Loring?
Yes.
Leslie McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
That carries. We will not be taking any action coming out of executive session. Instead, we will move to adjourn when we get out. So here's your Leslie. Did you have a question?
No, I was just making sure we were moving through it so that we will adjourn.
Yeah. So here's your opportunity to take a break while we shut down things and get ready for executive session.